MTG history. Planeswalkers have been the multiverse-hopping protagonists, and often antagonists, that have driven many of Magic's biggest storylines. It follows then that since their very own card type was introduced in Lorwyn Block, they have represented some of the most powerful and contentious cards in the game. But does flavour always meet function, and what future would we like to see for these godlike mages? Welcome to Magic the Flavouring, the Magic the Gathering podcast, where we talk about all things Magic flavour, design, and lore. I'm your host, Andy Mann.
Hello.
Nathan Cancel.
And we're here today to talk about Planeswalkers.
Yay.
Yeah, we're not going to go too deep into it. We kind of felt that last week's episode when we discussed the state of the story. We actually got quite heavy, and it was a bit of a dense episode, right?
Yeah, listening back, we expressed some opinions, and we expressed them hard.
Yeah, we expressed them real hard. So this week, we just kind of wanted to have a break from our own pretentious bullshit and just kind of talk about if we can
have a break from it by indulging ourselves
in a recorded podcast process.
Yeah, sure, okay.
I guess we can't escape that, but we're gonna try and tone it down a little bit anyway. We're basically just gonna have a little bit of just chat and discussion about what we like and don't like about Planeswalkers. We're not doing too much of a history on Planeswalkers because that would be almost like a three-part series. I think we could probably do that actually.
At some point we can go back and have a look at how like the inception thing again, kind of like with the flavor and with the colors, like look at how they started and where they are now, especially we've had a lot of changes, but we'll be talking about all these kinds of things.
All right, cool. Well, it's good that we're doing a writer's room on air.
That's cool.
So but today instead we're just going to be doing general discussion, what we like, what we don't like, and where we want to see some of these Planeswalkers go, because there have been a lot of Planeswalkers introduced over the past couple of years, and some of them have gotten a few legs, some of them haven't. Notable ones
which are literally or not, because I don't think there's an octopus Planeswalker yet.
Planeswalkers don't have legs?
No, it's like most of them only have two.
Dreti doesn't have legs. He's got like a mechanized.
Well, I think he has. I just don't think they work anymore.
Oh, are they inside?
Yeah. I don't think they got exploded off.
I kind of thought they were like he was like a cyborg.
No,
he's in like a wheelchair.
Yeah, as far as I'm aware, he was part of the experiment went wrong, and he had to craft like his own. Well, not a wheelchair. He went for like crab chair.
Thing. Yeah, which, a crab chair.
If I was an ingenious iconoclaster, then I would definitely not just make a wheelchair.
No, sure.
Or maybe in Fiora they haven't invented the wheel yet. Who knows? Are there any vehicles in Fiora? No.
No.
Interesting.
They're all crabs.
Yeah, they're all crab people.
They're all crabs.
Oh, great. Fantastic.
Yeah, cool. So, well, there we go. Straight off
the rails immediately.
Planeswalker. I am right. So, in that opening intro, I did say that Planeswalkers as a card came in during Lorwyn Block.
Yeah, they were originally supposed to be in Future Sight, which is why Tarmogoyf, the original printing of Tarmogoyf, mentions Planeswalkers and Tribal in its little reminder text. Tribal was in Future Sight because it was on cards like the Rebel Enchantment, Bound in Silence, I think it is. And then you had Planeswalkers were supposed to be in somehow in Future Sight. They didn't manage to fit it in.
Sure.
If you go look at Future Sight, it's full of bonkers nonsense. So it's also why the cards don't necessarily feel like they're grounded in Lorwyn. Like none of them are completely egregious.
No.
Like none of them don't feel like they should be.
None of them
be.
Seem to be in the Lorwyn story.
They're not.
Story.
Because
they're not,
they weren't supposed to be.
And so you had Garrick, Liliana, Jace,
Chandra,
and Ajani.
Yeah.
Cool. It's kind of cool to think that Garrick was the original green Planeswalker.
Yeah,
this
is why I like... I mean, it's funny. Green's actually had it's been inundated because both Nissa and Vivian kind of play that same similar space now. And Garrick's technically back in the story.
Sure.
And I think he sheds the curse side of it. So I'd be surprised if he wasn't back to being just green again.
Well, I was about to ask you. I kind of think they might marry him up with a different colour.
It depends if he's going to go... If he goes righteous, then you might go white. We might have another white walker. I doubt it. I don't see it working with
green,
his...
Green-red?
I see him going green-red.
Yeah, green-red.
It depends on how much, as we said last episode, well, a couple of episodes ago, about how people's emotion might dictate, and red is the easiest one to kind of layer into a Planeswalker. Maybe.
Yeah.
We'll see how vengeful he's feeling.
Yeah, I think that'd be quite cool.
Yeah, they were also really cool because they're all drawn by Alexei Brisclow. I'm terrible with names. The French artist. And oh my god, the artworks are fantastic.
I do think the original Jace, the Party Jace artwork, is probably my favourite of his.
Yeah. I like Cunning Castaway. I think I just like Three Men of Planeswalker artwork
Can you clear it up for me? Because I've never known. The Fact or Fiction artwork, which has the robed figure.
Yeah.
That is Jace's robe.
I think
this is my question.
Yeah,
is that artwork for Fact or Fiction pre the design of Jace?
I believe it's pre Jace, yeah.
And is Jace...
And then Jace happened to maybe be married, like kind of... It also looks a lot like Arcanis.
Sure.
A little bit. I think it was supposed to just be a generic... blue mage with the blue
colour,
and then they used that trope and then went, let's make that into a character.
A little bit how Breyer was formulated off of Master Transmuter.
And how you had Nihirioth Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah.
And there's also something to be said for the fact that Jace originally looked like your typical blue mage and then went very emo.
They kind of made the de-aged him a lot.
And the face paint and all that nonsense. Like, he did become very much the poster boy.
But yeah, I think that was to make him more relatable, I suppose. Yeah,
I think initially it was supposed to come across as that kind of mysterious blue mage. But yeah, fact or fiction, as far as I'm aware, I'm probably wrong, actually, now. The more I think about it. Because the original fact or fiction was in that artwork.
If you know, do let us know on Twitter. Yeah, because that's something that bugs me the entire time that I've seen that artwork.
I don't think that artwork first came out with the Jace versus Chandra dual deck, but that card is in that set.
So the original artwork for fact or fiction is Squee and Hannah on the Weatherlight, right?
Yeah. So maybe actually, yeah. Well, that's a good point.
I think it is.
Yeah, it would make sense, especially if it came out in his... I think if they'd done that artwork before and then they put it in the dual deck, maybe they're trying to synonymize the two of them together.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Well, there we go. Right, well, we've already spoken a lot about what we like about Planeswalkers. Mm. So basically, for this outline, sometimes our outlines can be sort of like 3 or 4 pages of quite dense material. I've literally just put 3 questions on him. I'm just going to work our way through it. So I'm going to start positive. Mm-hmm. I'm going to start nice and easy breezy because there'll be plenty of time for ranting.
For once, I actually have more written under what I like than under what I don't.
That is interesting because you're usually really down on the game that you profess to love.
Thanks.
Okay. Yeah.
I have a lot of very strong opinion. I like a lot of things. I like things a lot. So I feel like my general demeanor, I feel is really positive. And everyone in my life tells me it's not.
Yeah.
but maybe I project negativity because I like to hold on to the positivity myself.
Or maybe everyone in your life is super negative.
Yeah, that does make sense. I mean,
yeah, sure. I mean it's got to be their fault. It can't possibly be you.
I feel like you're projecting your life.
Problems. Wow. Okay, cool. So the first question number one. I literally just wrote down, what planeswalkers work best on the cards? Or, I'm going to expand this out, what planeswalkers in general do you like, whether it's flavor-wise on the cards, because that is what we're all about, or which planeswalkers do you just like as characters?
Okay, so we're not talking necessarily mechanically.
Yeah.
Okay, also, just to throw this out here, at the point of recording, there were 202 different individual planeswalker cards.
Yeah, that's insane.
That is insane. As someone who used to deliberately go out and collect every single planeswalker card from a set, which was fine, until they started, even when they had like cards like Khan, like the original Khan Liberator, which was a $50 card when it first came out, even cards like that, when it was only 1 per set, it was fine.
Yeah.
And then they started doing planeswalker decks, they started doing supplemental products, and then they did things like War of the Spark, where they released 32 of them, and I kind of lost, I couldn't keep up anymore.
Sure, but those uncommon planeswalkers, they're not exactly hard to come by.
No, not at all. But the point being that there are a lot of different ones to choose from. Now, in terms of what I like lore-wise, flavor-wise, I like cards like Aminatu and the Wanderer. I like things that don't have everything about them automatically explained. I don't like the characters that essentially seem like they're a carbon copy of a certain trope or a certain... Like, I have a big issue with having, say, adding extra characters like, say, Arlincourt or Huatli, which, yes, okay, you want resident planeswalkers for your sets.
Yeah.
And they might have individual specific flavor points, like, say, being a warrior poet is amazing. But that won't necessarily come out very easily on the card.
Sure.
In the same way, I like Arlin's flip walker because we're a werewolf. That makes sense. And then when you see her in War of the Spark, it just felt very superfluous of, here's a wolf planeswalker. Like, you might as well have just made a creature at that point that you can activate an ability on to make more creatures.
Yeah.
At that point, that's where I like the ones that do something innovative. Like the fact that we don't know anything about Aminatu particularly, apart from that she's an 8-year-old.
She's an 8-year-old.
80-year-old, knowing kind of like her knowledge is future. Like she has knowledge of her own future.
Sure. Well, she's from a plane that we haven't been to before either, which is pretty cool. I mean, Aminatu is actually one that's on my list of planeswalkers that I really like. And I like her not just only because of the flavor wise of the lore, I really like her abilities. So she's Aminatu the Fate Shifter. Mm. Her whole magic is about changing fate, changing destiny, and warping reality. Her plus one is draw a card, then you put a card from your hand on top of your library. So that's immediate deck manipulation. Changing your own future. -1, exile another target opponent your own, and then return it to the battlefield under your control. Yeah,
resetting someone's destiny.
Resetting someone's destiny. Sure, because if you've attacked with something, or the deck works in a lot of ways about where you can give something away, like Pooka's Mischief, or something like that, and then you can bounce it back to your own side of the battlefield. And then her -6 is... I used to run an Aminatu deck. Mm. I never got this off. And even if I could, I don't think I would, because it's bonkers, but it's really flavorful. -6, choose left or right. Each player gains control of all non-land permanents other than Aminatu the Fate Shifter, controlled by the next player of the chosen direction. So you literally warp the whole battlefield.
Shifted.
And she came in the commander product, which means that she's meant to be played in multiplayer formats where everyone gets a different board state.
Yeah, and this was in a planeswalker commander set. So
yeah,
the games are probably going to go a bit long. Essentially the last one.
Yeah.
The last one. And the fact that your games are likely to go long and your planeswalker's probably gonna stick around a little bit longer. Plus the fact that it can be your commander. means that this can go off a lot more easily. And it's very, it's, this is one of the things I used to like about
2018.
Yeah, the old formula of Planeswalkers, where they had a plus, a minus, and then a big bonkers ultimate ability. Now that has been flexed around a lot because you don't want to just do the same thing each time, otherwise it does start to feel like a formula. And as much as her abilities, as you've said them, they work towards her character, work within the lore, they're not necessarily that weird or quirky. Like one of them's basically a form of card advantage, and the other one's not a form of protection.
It's just a blink.
It's just a blink. So essentially, she's got two different forms of, like, say, card advantage. No particular necessary way of protecting herself, which is something that you tend to want from Planeswalkers. But that bonkers ultimate ability, that's what I kind of like in Planeswalkers. Typically, in your normal standard constructed formats, you're not going to get to that. And if you do, you've probably won. Like, an ultimate typically always felt like win more, which is why I think they've tried to move away from it a little bit. And we'll talk about this in a bit, about how they've gone from ultimates to static abilities. Because that's a massive change.
Yeah.
And it has some big effects on how the cards are received, what the cards do, and also how they feel. Like, part of what I love about cards like Planeswalkers is that you did have this nonsense ability that if you ever got to pull it off, that game was probably going to be memorable.
Yeah, sure, I guess. But I don't know. Like, some of them really don't fall flat. But we're not talking about now. We're talking about things that we like. Mm. I really like as well about Emanati, the Fate Shifter, is the fact that she's in Esper colours.
Yeah.
So obviously she came with the Planes, Commander product, which means that colour identity is obviously a big part of that. I kind of feel if she was in a set product or a block product, she'd probably be two colours at most. Yeah. Probably white, blue or something like that.
This is something we'll get onto a little bit as well when we talk about future, is that I think adding more colours to Planeswalkers is a good thing. I don't think it's a bad thing.
Yeah, sure. Well, it makes it definitely, from a flavour point standpoint, makes them a lot more, mean a lot more.
Yeah, and I also think from a gameplay point of view, it means that they don't just go into everything as easily.
Sure, I mean, another Planeswalker that has found themselves in loads of different colours is Sarkhan Vol. Yeah. And eventually he got to the point where he was in, was he Team of Colours? He was red, green, blue.
This is
And he was in a block set though, wasn't he?
Yeah, so he was in the Tarkir, but Tarkir was a multicoloured set anyway.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of made sense
to do the triple.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, he's very interesting because there's another one that I said with what I think works best is when you see characters. So Emanati and Wanderer are fantastic because they've just dropped these isolated specific characters you don't know any background from. So there's lore in the future to come back to. Otherwise, you can, again, I like this, make up your own headcanon about it. I don't like the blasé, typical, I'm just another elf kind of cards. Whereas the thing I like about Sarkhan is that you see this colour gain and loss throughout the transition of his character growth.
Yeah, he's had so many different
commander cards. So he starts red-green, then red-black, and then about three or four red cards, and then red-green-blue. As a team of colour, and then back to red again. So I like the fact that we can see them at different points in the story gaining or losing colours based on their specific circumstance.
Well, that is kind of the point of having Planeswalkers, and it's kind of the point of how they changed the legend rule. So whereas before you couldn't have two Jaces on the battlefield
so obviously as a Planeswalker is the type, if the subtype was, which it always is the name of the Planeswalker.
Yeah, so Jace or Liliana or something.
Precisely. If you had two that had shared that, you'd have to, in the same way as having two of the exact same legendary creature, you'd have to choose one and the other one would be put into the graveyard.
Yeah, and then that led to kind of meta games where when Jace the Mind Sculptor and the original Jace were on the in the same modern format, they were sort of big staples because Jace the Mind Sculptor was kind of a format warping card.
Yeah.
People would play the 3-mana Jace
as a removal spell.
As a removal spell for the 4-mana Jace, or so that they couldn't play, because if the person who played Jace the Mind Sculptor after the original Jace on the battlefield, they'd both have to go.
Yeah.
So it was kind of protecting
against
that.
Legendary rulings have changed quite a lot over the years, and I think they've done it for the best. I think it was ridiculous when you had one and the other person couldn't play their one.
Yeah, but it's kind of cool that these Planeswalkers, especially the same Planeswalker across multiple cards, isn't necessarily saying they're even the same person, because it's almost like a photograph of who they are at the time.
Yeah, yeah.
And colour identity is a massive part of that. I really love it. Like, Sarkhan Vol's a really good example of that. Another great example from, I'm going to say recent set, it isn't recent, but it's recent in terms of Magic, is Nyssa, Steward of Elements from Amonkhet. Mm. She's classically always been a green planeswalker, still is. Mm. But for that plane, because the plane itself was so arid, and the green mana was probably at its weakest in terms of it being through a natural thing. Green mana on that plane was all about strength.
The plane was dying.
She had to then tap into the blue mana of the Luxor River, which went out throughout the Hekma was the protective thing over the top of the city.
Oh.
But it was the main river that went through the city that they were in on Amonkhet. Exactly, yeah. And so she became a blue-green planeswalker, which really fit for what the story was trying to do.
The way that she had to do her trial of knowledge allowed her to tap into that particular, like realistically, Nisha should be able to do all five colours eventually.
Yeah,
like, she
sure.
tries. She talks to the soul of Innistrad as well when she's over there in the Return to Innistrad block. So I like the idea that she could go forwards as being not just a green mage. I mean, I think the thing about it is it's not about the mana that she's using, because she could technically, I think, tap into all the ley lines. It's about her ethos.
Yeah.
And I think her ethos is exceptionally green, not just because she's an elf, but because of the way that she... The way that she is. I mean, yeah, if we ignore the weird xenophobic racist bit that she did.
Well, they retconned that
yeah,
anyway.
Yeah, good. Yeah, it's things like that. Like, actually, I wouldn't mind going back and seeing if they ever did, like, an unset and they went back and showed, like, the I don't think, actually, though, that's not politically correct. You can't do that.
I don't think they use unsets for any kind of political agenda. I think they use unsets so they can do things like Nerf gun war and all that kind of thing.
And make Beebles into a planeswalker.
Make Beebles into a planeswalker, yeah. All right, what other things about planeswalkers are you, like, pretty much up on at the moment?
I like Will and Rowan, the fact they share a spark. I like the fact we've got our first duo planeswalker, essentially.
I think
that they worked well individually and you can play them as partners. I love that. I mean, I play them as an EDH deck. I have multiple partner decks. I like not only have just having the option, but the fact that you have these two complementary cards that work well with each other. And the fact that we got to see, we had Rowan by herself in one of the planeswalker decks released for Throne of Eldraine, but I do really like the Royal Sirens having a card together.
Yeah.
The fact they both have the little subtype at the back as well.
Yeah.
Works really nicely.
Yeah, I really like that. How, metaphysically speaking, because the idea is that they share one spark.
Yeah.
It's not two twins that both happen to have a spark.
Yeah.
It's that they share one central spark. Metaphysically,
I'm pretty sure they have to walk at the same time. I believe they have to walk at the same time.
But does that mean then that it's... So the situation of their birth is explored in The World of Quest by Kate Elliott, is the fact that they're a result of a tryst between a witch and King Kenrith.
Yeah.
And then that's how they're born. So they have this kind of inherent magic about them anyway that then potentially leads into
a
spark?
Yeah, it might have given it more of a kick, more of a chance.
Sure.
I mean, I imagine there might have been, because they might have been so bound to each other, it might even be something as simple as one can't survive the other, like they would have died and because they were...
If they were in War of the Spark, say if they had been in Ravnica at the time of the War of Spark and one of them got de-sparked,
would it have only been harvested
half
of it, or would it have harvested from both?
Would they both have died?
Yeah, well, this is what we like. This is clearly what we like. We like planeswalkers that make you ask questions. It's not just a normal person. It's done, simple, easy, does +1/+1 counters.
You don't like Arlen Cord? You were saying earlier.
I say is I don't like... I like the flip. So this is what I mean. It's like the two different cards she has. One of them is very, very cool for the fact it is... Okay, her abilities
are
super
generic.
So
you have from Shadows Over Innistrad, you have just Arlen Cord, which was the first iteration.
Yeah, and it shows her having the ability to be a planeswalker that is also a werewolf that can flip, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
The fact that then the next time we see her, she's just a very generic wolf planeswalker.
That's
what I mean, as in the things I like are when you do something innovative or you do something interesting or unique, or even if you do something that works very succinctly, like you don't need to do something unique. We'll come into that I'll touch on that in just a second. But when you have a good example of something unique and then you show the blandest version of it, again, like when we'll get into when we talk about things we don't like, but they have dumbed down some aspects of planeswalkers in some products.
But isn't that... But, I mean, that idea... Yeah, right. Her card in War of the Spark, I can't even remember the name of it. She was an uncommon planeswalker. It was boring. And it was essentially just wolf tribal planeswalker. But isn't the idea... And she was only one colour, which I was a bit iffy about, because
her
original card is
to
two colours.
It's like even Hoatli shouldn't necessarily have been white-green, but they needed to fit an extra white-green.
Well, no, but yeah, but then they could have hybrid-mannered, like they did with a bunch of the other planeswalkers.
Yeah, but then is Samet just a monogreen one? There was an article that's kind of spoke about this, and they said, like, okay, so if we've got this many blue walkers, which ones can we make multiple colour? Which ones do we have to give this extra colour to? Like, I reckon the only reason Ashiok was in the set is because they needed a black-blue one. And they didn't have Tezzeret in
I think Arlen Cord, and actually I do say, even though her card in War of the Spark was
Voice
bland,
of the Pack. The other one.
What's the other one, sorry?
Voice of the Pack.
Voice of the Pack. Even though it's kind of bland and, yeah, not a great representation of Arlen Cord, isn't the idea of werewolves, and I love werewolves as a creature type, I actually really dislike the fact that they're not on other planes. I was convinced they were going to be in Throne of Eldraine. Isn't the idea is that werewolf and lycanthropy, I can't say that word, lycanthropy.
Yeah, nice.
is only a thing because of the silver moon on Innistrad.
Yeah.
So when she goes to other planes, she can't transform.
No, she can't. Yeah, so if she... So what originally happens, I think she planeswalked away in wolf form and she couldn't transform until she came back to Innistrad.
Yeah, so whatever way she goes.
Yeah, when she leaves the plane, whatever form she's in, she can't necessarily change
which
back.
I do hope they retcon somehow, because... Or at least they find another plane where they can have werewolves, because to have her being essentially the werewolf alpha across the multiverse would brilliant.
Yeah.
Her original card is actually one of my flavour sort of wins. The fact that she is a Flipwalker from human to Planeswalker, and that both sides have some kind of different sort of alpha mechanic. So her
Embraced
werewolf side,
by the Moon is such a cool name as well.
Yeah, Arlo Embraced by the Moon is a werewolf side, and her plus one on that one is creatures you control gain plus one and trample down the turn. Not necessarily the most exciting gruel planeswalker mechanic, but it really works as the idea is that at this point she's like the alpha of the pack,
yeah,
and she's making everyone else, or she buffs them up.
Hey, you're playing this in a creature deck, you're not going to be playing it in isolation.
Sure. And then her zero ability on her human side, which is how she comes into the battlefield naturally. The zero ability is create a 2/2 wolf creature token and then transform Marlin Cord.
Mm-hmm.
So the fact that by the time she gets to the werewolf side, even if you don't have any other werewolf or wolf synergies,
she's still got
a pack around her,
yeah,
which is great. Like, that's amazing. Mm. Like, that's so cool. And this is the kind of thing where she wasn't necessarily pushed in that set. She wasn't winning any, like, you know, game nights or anything like that. But she just worked so well. And she was very accessible at two colours as well.
And at 4 mana, she came down early enough to actually make an impact.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, that's the... there's a lot to be said about, like, the mechanic of where's the sweet spot for planeswalkers.
Yeah. Kind of a really nice... as a character as well, I'm really behind Arlen Cord. I think she's one of my most interesting characters, for me, one of the most interesting characters in Magic. She's also, like, a middle-aged... person. She's a middle-aged character.
Yeah, she's got grey in her hair.
Which they actually, on the artwork for Voice of the Pack, the War of the Spark one, they kind of de-aged her a lot.
A little, yeah. You've still got the tuft at the back. And also, the artwork's not necessarily quite so...
She looks like she's in her 20s.
Yeah, she does look a bit...
I like the fact that she's already quite world-weary.
She's a bit grizzled.
She's already a bit grizzled, because in the story, she's already had her journey, if you like, which, from a narrative point, might not be great if she's the protagonist for that point in time.
Mm.
But actually... to have a character that's not like some young idealist or some naive little person, like, you know, like a child, essentially. Like, you know, the Jace and Chandra characters, especially when you come to the Gatewatch, you're following them and they're like babes in the multiverse world.
Yeah, they're still trying to learn everything. Like, it works for something, say, like Harry Potter, where you're looking at it from his point of view because you're seeing everything. He's seeing everything for the first time. You're seeing everything for the first time with him. So that awe and wonder works a little bit. It's annoying to follow characters that are always constantly trying to figure out everything. You just sometimes want someone who's already been around for a little bit. That's like you feel secure when Ugin shows up because you're like, yeah, fantastic, right, cool. You've been around a while. You know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
And then it also kind of gives you backstory to look into instead of having to build up a backstory from scratch, because we don't know if Jace is going to live to 50. If Jace did live to 50, then he's probably had a really interesting life.
Yeah.
Not to say that, obviously that's just a random point out of nowhere. But yeah, it's nice to have characters that have had some amount of history to them.
She has her own agenda. She's not just there to be like a side story for the characters during Shadow of Zone Shred.
Pander into the arc that's currently going.
Yeah,
on.
Yeah, she's got her own thing.
Still, whatever.
Yeah, she's great. I would definitely want to see much more of Arlen Cord. And again, I think kind of a missed trick going into Eldraine and not having some kind of werewolf.
Yeah, I think there's a point to say about this when we talk about planeswalkers, seeing them from before they spark into when they spark, I think there's something to be said for the how to produce the product and having the flip cards having double facing.
So yeah, this was my idea.
Print issue.
This was my idea that of having if you have in the storyline, and again, this would make some way to stitch the story and the cards together a bit nicer. Is if you have in the storyline a planeswalker character be non. Planeswalker, so before they're Sparking Knights in the story, they're Sparking Knights, and then they're a Planeswalker to have unanimously a Flipwalker. Yeah. So you have that
like
Magic Calyx Origins.
Would have been amazing had we seen him before he was a Planeswalker.
Well, I guess. I don't know. Calyx is...
And then it's...
I hate Calyx.
Pay green, white, despair about one's inability to function in life, and then transform.
Sure. All there I was go. Thinking for Huatli...
Shed
for,
real tears at own disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, God, he was... The more I think about Calyx, the more he bugs me. I was thinking for Huatli during the Ixalan stories.
Yeah.
So her in the story, her spark ignites when she's having a battle.
Yeah, with Angrath.
With Angrath.
Yeah. She sees the shining spires of Kaladesh.
Sure.
And she thinks it's Araska, which is very interesting.
But the way that her spark ignites is that she's about to be killed.
Mm.
She loses the fight, essentially. And she's about to die, so her spark ignites... and she gets whisked away, and I think that'd be great. If you had the human side... So now, I will say the caveat is, the Flipwalkers from Origins, in which they did the Gatewatch Planeswalkers, their abilities didn't necessarily relate to how their spark ignited. It was just something that was flavorful for them. So, for example...
I don't know, because Liliana's worked because it was her brother dying. So
yeah,
one of your brother dies,
I mean,
you get the 2/2.
What about Kithian? Kithian wasn't...
Kithian sparked where, no, because he sparked when all of his guys, oh yeah, when his,
no, but his
he
died.
Yeah, but his irregulars had to attack to then be hit back by everybody.
Why I'm saying,
yeah, they're
is,
tenuous. I know what you mean.
No,
they're
very, but they still worked within the flavour of the character.
Yeah.
So I guess what you have for Hoatli is you could have, if Hoatli pre-sparked would die or be put into exile, instead flip her over into a planeswalker.
Yeah.
Something simple like that. I think you could probably have that ability for a good
quite a few
of
them, because a lot of the is when you have to have a very traumatic experience or something super incredible happen, like a rush of emotion or whatever, because obviously Samut flipped when she felt the adoration of a Ketra, didn't she?
Sure,
in
yeah.
Which was so filled with...
So yeah, a spark ignites with an extreme flood of emotion. Most of the time it's to do with either trauma or pain.
Yeah, so usually if you have like a near-death experience, say like Domri, for example, was buried alive, like that's usually the kind of thing that will trigger if you have a spark.
Yeah.
Don't just go, hey, I'm going to attempt, you know, to kill myself and then become a planeswalker.
No. Or like Kallax, don't just be like, well, I can't do my job anymore. Oh, ooh, what's this spark I've suddenly
Kallax
got?
Kallax is the new Nurgle. Like, we're just going to trounce him to the end
he's
of time.
He's just so poor. He's such a poor design. but we're talking about things we do like.
Yeah.
We do like
okay, so other ones that I like are things like Tamio. I like Tamio a lot. Not just because she's got some decent abilities and she's she has three different colour identities, which I like as well. It's the fact that she has enough lore about her, about these like forbidden scrolls that she's not supposed to open or read because they are filled with immense, immense magic. The fact that her ultimates are so bonkers crazy, all it shows to me is that you got her to the point of where she had to use one of these forbidden scrolls.
Yeah, well, trap Emrakul in the moon. Right?
Yeah, or so one of them essentially is omniscience. One of her ultimates is omniscience.
Yeah, sure.
And there's things like that it kind of, where the ability does tie into the flavour of their character, and to the point where you almost feel like you are actively using their abilities. Sometimes Scry 2, draw a card doesn't really feel like a spell. I mean, it does, but you're pondering, but you don't want to get a planeswalker to sit there and ponder. Do something, you know? Like, this is why Cunning Castaway was such an interesting card, because it was one of the first ones where he actually makes bloody illusions.
Yeah.
And then you even can make illusions of himself. You can have multiple Jace Cunning Castaway planeswalkers. That is so interesting.
Yeah. And I like the Jace planeswalker from Shadows over in Estrad, with the Unraveler of Secrets.
Yeah.
Was his top ability was to scry one. And it was the idea of him literally just going peeking, going, "Oh, is this a clue?
Investigation.
Oh, I'm unraveling the secret." You're literally just getting a bit more information, which I think was
Nice. Yeah, I guess that's the whole point. Yeah, like it's not necessarily what abilities they have; it's the abilities that they have based on what they're doing. The thing that, and this is one of the things that's interesting about planeswalkers, is because we have got say 9 different Gideons and like 7 different Sarkans and things like that. You do see them not just all the different things they can do, but what they're doing in that specific story, that specific time. Gideon Blackblade is interesting for that reason.
Yeah, sure.
As opposed to say like Gideon Jura, the normal typical one.
Yeah.
Like the fact you can see the differences between them based on kind of what they're doing in the moment is quite nice.
Yeah. Tell you who my sort of top pick for flavor meets function on a planeswalker card.
Mm-hmm.
And the card itself isn't doing anything that's particularly bonkers interesting, but it's just so smooth. And that's Dak Faden.
Okay. Yeah.
So yeah,
Dak's
blue
red.
He's
a fan favorite as well.
Yeah, he's a fan favorite. One blue red for a legendary planeswalker deck. He's +1. His target player draws 2 cards and then discards 2 cards, so he's rummaging. So Dak Faden is the greatest thief in the multiverse.
Was the greatest thief.
Well, yeah, before he got cut down in the trailer for War of the Spark and the book, if you ever want to read that. Don't read it.
Well, no, do read it. Just don't have high expectations.
No, if you've got high blood pressure, like I do, don't read it.
You went for high blood pressure.
You already got a high blood pressure if you're playing Magic the Gathering. Don't make it worse. So his top one is target player draws 2 cards and discards 2 cards. So he's rummaging. He's looking for all the information that he needs. He's looking for that little trinket that he wants. His -2 is gain control of target artifact. He steals the artifact. Brilliant. And his -6 is you get an emblem with whenever you cast a spell that targets one or more permanents, gain control of those permanents. So his stealing magic becomes even better. I think that's just so brilliant. It tells a whole story across those 3 modes. And the -6, as you said, is probably game winning. I mean, the -2 could be potentially game winning.
Yeah,
well,
if you're sealing a mox or whatever like that,
especially
Legacy, it's bonkers.
Yeah, it's just really smooth. And there haven't been that many Dak Faden planeswalker cards. I mean, that's his only card, right? Isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And probably anyone we're ever going to get.
It tells, well, they might go back. They have potential to go back and do sort of timey-wimey stuff if they really want to.
We've already got Teferi. We don't need more timey-wimey stuff.
Well, no, or they might do a prequel. I still think there's room for them to do prequel stories.
Yeah, okay, actually, yeah, no, prequel stories would be really interesting.
Yeah,
I know like doing retroactive planes, but I don't see why we can't see a plane from 2000
years ago. Sure, but then
ago.
We have had Commander products which have had characters which have been longer.
Yeah, but they're not like a whole block. Like, no, Commander, like, we would probably, like this with Legends everything coming out, we'll segue a little bit, it kind of works because we've already got confirmation that we're going to see a Jessica Planeswalker.
Oh, yeah.
So we are clearly going to see characters from back in the day, and we will see Planeswalkers from back in the day. We might not see Urza, because technically by canon he would be so unbelievably powerful. The fact that even his head in the headmaster card from the onset of where he has basically plus any of the abilities from any of the planeswalkers that had a plus ability, and then his minus ability is any of the minus abilities from any of the planeswalker minus abilities, like that kind of idea of where even just as a head he can do anything that anyone else can
do. Sure,
already shows that okay, you probably can't actually make an Urza planeswalker card without him being
have the most recent Bolas card, which was Bolas dragon god. Had his static ability was he had all powers of each other planeswalker on the battlefield,
which I think is also again very flavorful,
incredibly flavorful, but also incredibly busted.
Yeah, but it's also five color. I don't know. I mean, they'd have to balance
four
it massively.
Four color. He's still Grixis.
So it's in like so five pips. You have to go red, black, blue.
Oh, sure. Yeah,
which means
it
takes five different, like five specific colors of colored manner to play him.
Which... I'll tell you my other sort of big flavor win of recent Magic for planeswalkers. Then I'll let you kind of carry on because I feel like I'm just gushing over these planeswalkers now. Is Khan, Scion of Urza.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, because he's not the biggest or splashiest planeswalker, but looking at him is really interesting. So just even his artwork. So four mana. For a legendary planeswalker, Khan is plus one. Reveal the top two cards of your library. An opponent chooses one of them, then puts that card into your hand and exile the other card with a silver counter on it. Now, at this point in the story, this is from the Return to Dominaria set. He's looking for the Golgothian Silex. Golgothian?
That's Golgothian, yeah.
Yeah, Golgothian Silex, which is the mega weapon.
Whether it's CY or SY.
Yeah, they've changed the spelling. Yeah. This is the mega weapon that Urza used to destroy the Phyrexians on Dominaria.
Yep.
And now Khan wants to use it to go and fight the Phyrexians.
Round two, let's go.
Round two, ding ding. We will be going there soon. So it's this idea that, again, he's trying to rummage for the information he needs. And it might be just out of his reach, but it is also just there at the same time. His minus one is put a card from your own... put a card you own with a silver counter on it from exile into your hand. So again, it's just a way to get the other card if you need to, but it takes more time. And then his minus two is create a 0/0 colors construct artifact creature token with this creature gets +1/+1 for each artifact you control. The +1/+1 thing is kind of neither here nor there, but the fact that he's making a construct, because in the story in the story he's got all these automatons that are helping him look for the Silex. And then also I quite like the idea that, again, a bit like how Shadows over Innistrad Jace kind of scries to look for the secrets, the fact that he's literally digging up the earth in Dominaria to try and find the Silex, you're digging through your deck to try and find the answers. I think all these like physical ways that you can use cards to express what they're actually trying to do is brilliant. And that's why
he's also got the time travel-y kind of like lord behind him as well, which kind of works with this. You put one, you get one now and you get one potentially later, because it can travel back through time because it's got the silver counter on.
Yeah,
this is why it was originally supposed to be silver, is because silver can go through time without issue.
Yeah.
Well, I say without issue.
Urza discovered that silver wasn't affected too much by the blind eternities.
So he could do all that nonsense. But obviously, it didn't go flawlessly.
No.
it went quite shockingly poorly.
The artwork from him is really cool as well, because you get a little glimpse of Urza maybe being a bit more sort of stoic. He's got a stained glass window of... Urza in the background. Sorry, Khan's a bit more stoic. Urza's in the background in a stained glass window, and he's looking at a globe of Dominaria, which I think is a nice little touch.
Yeah.
He's wearing some clothes. He's got a little.
He's
like,
got a little loincloth. Yeah. Maybe he had an attachment in our time since we've seen him.
Yeah.
And then before we got to the Great Creator, he realised that this is for children as well. So
yeah. War the Spark. He's ready to fight. Yeah, so he's got to be butt naked.
The other little attachment.
Hey, I've got to fuck shit up. I'm going to rip off my my little tabard, my little like loincloth. So I really like Khan's Iron of Urza.
Well, same similar vein. The Harbinger. Two red white for a legendary planeswalker and Nahiri. The first two abilities don't necessarily matter too much. What I like is that her plus two to discard a card to draw a card works with madness, and obviously the whole point is that
she's sowing the madness.
Her minus two to exile a target enchantment, artifact or tapped creature doesn't necessarily work so flavorfully beyond the fact that she is one already very, very powerful. She does have the ability to not petrify things, but Declaration in Stone kind of shows her fusing.
So yeah, this is the Nahiri card from Shadows Over Innistrad, and this is where she's summoning Emrakul and like bolstering Emrakul's influence on Innistrad.
She's manipulating all of the lithoglyphs. Sure, some amount of L, Th, and G in there, and she's manipulating all of those to essentially bring in what was like. It was almost like an invisible gravity well.
Yeah.
And essentially what she was doing was summoning Emrakul. What I love is her -8. You search your library for an artifact or creature card, put it onto the battlefield, shuffle your library, it gains haste, and you return it to your hand at the beginning of the next end step. So she literally... And I didn't get to do this even in the pre-release. I opened a Nahiri in the pre-release, so I went white-red. Obviously, of course, I was going to. I only got some Flamebreak Angel or whatever, so that was the only thing I could really go and get. But the fact that it felt like you could literally go and get Emrakul. You could go and get Emrakul and do the thing that the story did. You can get the character to do the thing that it did in the story.
Yeah, that's
and not
really
just
tight.
In a basic way of I make a wolf because I like wolves. No offense, Arlen. I don't know why I keep ragging on Arlen.
Yeah, she's great. Shut up.
Oh, sorry.
Leave her alone.
But the fact that you can see her literally like do the thing that she's doing in the story is super interesting.
Yeah, to replicate that's a big thing which I think Vorthos's struggle to do and what they really want to do sometimes, especially in things like Commander where they can kind of craft their decks to be suboptimal in a kind of competitive sense, is that sometimes you really want to be able to tell the story of Magic on the battlefield. It's like how we went nuts over the fact that you trapped my vampire from in the Night of the Dusk
in the Tomb of the Dusk Rose, because I got to get her to come out of the Tomb of the Dusk Rose.
It told
like,
the
it
story
in the story.
Yeah, it told the story, which is what we want to do. But a lot of the time, even if you build your deck that way, it's not always viable. So to have a planeswalker which has this design space to be able to tell a story through modes 1, 2, and 3, it's the same reason sagas are so good,
and it doesn't sacrifice too much of the functionality.
No, not at all. Really cool.
Yeah. On the flip side, the other thing I like about it's one of the last things I'm going to say that I like. I'm not saying
this is the last thing I like.
I could. There's a lot of things to say, but this is one of the last ones that I'd had written down. Is that I like planeswalkers that have what they've done recently is instead of having generic planeswalkers that do the formula of a plus that protects. Or say like a plus that generates card advantage, a minus that protects, and then an ultimate that does something crazy. They've tried to shift around their generic power of planeswalk as well. So it's not just like plus one draw a card, minus three kill a creature, minus six put all creatures from the grave onto the battlefield. Obviously, I'm mixing and matching abilities. There's no individual card that does that, but there is a formula to them. It's cards like Kaya, the Orzhov Usurper, where it's three mana, which historically, three mana planeswalkers, you need to be careful because they come in very early and they do kind of warp the game around them a little bit. But the fact she does three very individual, niche, distinct things, the fact that, yes, okay, it worked in Modern because there are a lot of one single mana permanents that you want to use her minus ability on. And there are a lot of things that in the graveyard that you want to get rid of as well. So the fact that she was so uniquely and initially powerful is super cool because I don't want planeswalkers just be ubiquitous, useful in everywhere. And this is something we'll come onto in a little bit. But one of the things that's good about planeswalkers, you can make them really super narrow. And it might be annoying that, they're not the big slashy card that goes in every deck, but the fact they are so narrow and they do that thing very uniquely and powerfully makes them more flavourful.
No, I 100% agree. If you look at something like Liliana and Untouched by Death, which is the 4-mana Liliana from M19, she's probably one of the least powerful Lilianas, but each one of her plus 1, minus 2, minus 3, I'm not going to bother reading it all out, but she's incredibly zombie-centric. She's like a zombie tribal planeswalker. Mm-hmm. And all the other Lilianas, or at least I'd say maybe 3/4 of them, have some kind of zombie synergy with them. Whether they create a zombie or bring the stuff from out of the graveyard as a zombie. But very few of them you would necessarily put in a zombie deck as a windmill slam. Whereas I kind of feel like Liliana Untouched by Death, a little bit underpowered as Lilies go, but she's probably the most narrow. And actually, I think that's pretty flavourful.
Well,
right?
Liliana of the Dark Realms is the same thing, of where she's specific just to swamps. One of the things, this is one of the things I just touched on, is that I would rather have them do, instead of going Liliana is the black planeswalker because she is, you've got Sorin, but I mean, he's the vampire planeswalker. As much as she's the black planeswalker, she does the zombie things. She does generic graveyard things. She also has one of the planeswalk cards which does specifically swamp things. Now, in my mind, that should be a different character. You shouldn't just, and this is before they kind of really, not necessarily worked it out, but kind of made this distinction of keeping everything a little bit more specific.
I would say it's fair to say that a lot of the, even like, not even earlier planeswalkers, but right up until maybe around Magic Origins time, planeswalkers, they just made generically good.
Yeah.
They weren't really to do with
And they kind
character.
Of had to throw all the ideas out a little bit. And Linear of the Dark Realms, when she came out, everyone didn't necessarily think she was that good, but her price has gone up because actually it's pretty decent. decent in a mono black or even close to mono black deck, even in EG, especially
she,
in EGH.
She gives you more mana per swamp that you
yeah.
have, right?
And then you can, when you're minus six, you get an emblem where all your swamps tap for four black instead of a single black.
Yeah.
Which is very interesting.
Yeah.
So as much as you do want planeswalkers that are just good, you want them to have some weight and some power because they are really usually important characters. They're always going to be mythic, typically, unless you do a War of the Spark kind of set. So they're going to probably be a bit more expensive. They're going to feel really splashy. So if they don't do something cool, you're going to be a bit annoyed about it. The other flip side is when they get to do cards like Lord Windgrace or Frailes, where you have characters that you haven't seen for years and years and years. You see them in a card form and they do something that's really awesome. It does the thing that you kind of expect them to do anyway. Like, we didn't necessarily think that Windgrace was necessarily going to be red. We weren't entirely sure. We knew there was going to be a black and a green part of him too there. But looking through his planeswalk, it's a very interesting card because it does just work within the character that we've already established for him. Same with Frailes. It worked within the character we established for them. And instead of it having to build an expectation and deliver all in one card, it had an expectation previously that you've then managed to actually deliver on.
So, sure.
Right,
all right.
So that's positivity.
That's all positivity. Now to the thing that we actively enjoy, and that's being super negative about a card game we profess to love so much. Planeswalker stuff that you think, I don't know, man. Like, not necessarily that you don't like or you dislike, but that just doesn't quite work for you. Like, in the realm of this game as kind of an expression of, like, a lore, if that makes sense.
So, I've kind of already said this is, I don't like seeing an eighth iteration of a character. Unless it's
too many Jaces.
Too many Gideons. They're too many all just Gideons, mono-white yeah. Gideons. Why couldn't Gideon Blackblade be at least white-black?
Everyone thought he was going to be white-black. I mean, why wasn't he white-black?
Expectation subversion? I don't know. But the point is, I don't want to see yet another Jace unless it's going to be something like Unraveler of Secrets. Not Unraveler of Secrets.
Cunning Castaway.
Cunning Castaway.
Yeah.
I want to see an aspect of the Planeswalker that I haven't yet seen. I like the fact that we are now seeing these static abilities on Planeswalkers.
Cool, right? This is a bit contentious. So yeah, as of War of the Spark, they added static abilities, almost like enchantments onto Planeswalkers. So each Planeswalker had the top line was some kind of static ability. So, for example, I just happen to have Huatli, the Sun's Heart, in front of me. She's an uncommon Planeswalker. Her static ability, no laws or counters involved, is each creature you control assigns combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. Which I will say, now that we're in the section of things that we dislike, this Huatli sucks. Why is toughness anything to do with what she does?
No, exactly. That's, again, this is where when you have 32 Planeswalkers in a set, or at least you want to then make sure that each colour combination, each hybrid has one, each individual colour has like a rare, a mythic, and an uncommon. That kind of, you're going to end up having to shoehorn certain mechanics and certain characters together.
I mean, this was the blessing and the curse of War of the Spark, right?
Yeah. Because they inundated had some planeswalkers with options.
We had it brought in great stuff like the static abilities, like you just said, and it brought in new characters, things like the Wanderer. We got to see sort of coming in, brilliant. But then, they kind of, and this is a problem with planeswalkers. I think what we were saying about color identity as well. They kind of get restricted by the realm that they're in from a game design point of view.
The color pie ties a lot of hands sometimes.
Yeah, or just like they have to have a planeswalker which draws you a card, or they have to, or like planeswalkers for the most part, people get really salty about planeswalkers if you take up a mythic slot with a walker that doesn't have a way to protect itself by, say, creating a token or tapping down a creature.
Exactly, yeah.
Game players who have bugger all interest in the flavor, which unfortunately seems to be more than I'd like.
More than care
about it. They see them very much as like a functional thing, as like another card type, as opposed to like, oh, there are these cool, like, even if planeswalkers were unplayable in constructed formats, which I kind of think they might be in the future somehow.
This is where the more going niche works.
Yeah, I think that, actually that would still be fine.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think it'd be fine. Like, give a mythic slot to something that is completely unplayable in your pre-release. Why not?
The whole bit, you shouldn't make your mythics the cards that everyone needs for every deck. This is why things like Oko.
So
looking, so the flip side being that you planeswalkers, so the reason why I like the static ability is because it shows the character what they kind of do typically normally anyway. So something like Tibalt, players can't gain life. Now, as much as that might not feel like a planeswalker a bit, I did air quotes again. Every episode I do air quotes.
Stop doing air quotes.
Sorry. Air quote, planeswalker abilities, end air quote. It doesn't feel like he's doing it every turn because he's doing it all the time. The fact that when Tibalt's around, you can't gain life. It gives him more gravity. The fact that you don't have to activate it every turn to get something out of it and it's already doing something. Also, the fact that most of these static abilities were on Planeswalkers, apart from the rare ones, where you only had a minus ability. And it usually worked for most of them that you'd have at least one loyalty counter left on. So you'd start with five, you'd have an ability that did a minus two. So you could use it two turns and then you had to stick around with one counter unless you proliferated or whatever to be able to get it back up again. So essentially you'd get a, what spell would it cast as well as what does it do normally, yeah, naturally. Now the reason why this is quite nice is because you can have them feel much more vulnerable. And you can still get value out of them, even if they do get attacked and killed pretty quickly. Whereas with other planeswalkers, if you want to, as you say, want them to stick around and you have a five mana really interesting version of a Liliana that you need to do something cool, you want it to have an ability to protect itself, you want it to have an ability to have some card advantage.
Yeah.
It warps the entire game around them. If it has a way to add two counters, well, say, screw it. I'm talking about the elephant in the room here. Okay. Not only are you generating advantage in the clues, but you're also adding two loyalty to it. The fact that you're able to, when you're making an elk, not, or turning something into an elk, also adding a counter onto it, you're making it harder and harder to kill as you're gaining advantage. Now, this dual effect makes the game so difficult. And recently, we've got Nissa, you've had Oko, and you've had Teferi. And it's like the three mana Teferi. And all it does is warp the game around it. And if your poster child, or not poster child, but if one of your leading cards for a given set is going to be a super powerful planeswalker, then it is going to warp the format, because even if it's only one per set, that's still three sets, yeah, a year. So every format's going to have maybe each set dominated by a deck that has as its marquee card be one of the planeswalkers. Can you let Oko survive? Can you get your Nissa to survive?
Yeah.
Can Teferi survive? And they do such warped things. And this is where static ability might not work so well, because Teferi's static ability is just an extra level of douchery on top of what he really does.
So I think from a gameplay point of view, it's kind of hard. I mean, as in with the storyline as well, it is kind of hard to kill planeswalkers, because if they are strong enough, they can just blip out of like the situation. Mm-hmm. And if you have an enchantment, even in formats where enchantment removal might be quite abundant, or like maybe in the meta, for example. So like standard might have, there might be a standard where enchantment removal is kind of, you know, 10 apiece.
Yeah. If you have, say, like the enchantment block like Theros, where they have to load in answers for the limited time.
Yeah, then having an enchantment-like thing is fine. But if you stick it on a planeswalker where you have to either have specific planeswalker removal, or you have to have really good damage dealers, or you have to have really good attackers.
Yeah.
But then if the planeswalkers are supported enough, yeah, then it's really hard to get those through.
If they have a static and they can plus, that's where it gets difficult and scary, because you already have generic value, and then you're adding the value of the plus ability to the static ability and the fact that they have to attack.
If the plus also protects them.
Reasonably, I don't think they'll do that because they're smart enough to. And the thing is, now we have 202 different planeswalkers. They've kind of started to see where the balance is. They keep making, like, see, one of my favourite ones that came out recently is the new Mu Yangling. The Sky Dancer. The fact that she's a three mana walker, she can't even use her minus ability the first time she comes in. You have to build her up.
Yeah,
it doesn't do anything particularly powerful. But in the if I was to build a five color elemental deck, it would definitely go in there just because it makes an element elemental. And I like niche. I think niche works. I think generic doesn't. And I think maybe they need to load more colors in. And this is where how many more negatives have you got to say?
I mean, all you've done is spoken about what you've liked again. You've just been going, I've liked for the past 10 minutes with a spattering of, you know, and I don't
because,
like this.
I guess it's because I know that the way they're handling it at the moment is good. Like, static abilities work for that, but I think that's one thing that they need to be careful of. And I think it's mostly because they've worked a lot of things recently against the things I didn't like.
I just think you like planeswalkers more than you're letting on. I think you're struggling to find anything you dislike about them. You just don't like generically powerful cards.
I just don't like generic things in general.
Here's something I specifically don't dislike about planeswalkers. I don't like it when they make planeswalkers into just what are already staple creatures in the format that they're in. So Jace Warder of Mysteries, for example, which is the Jace from War of the Spark. A lot of ragging on War of the Spark. I mean, they did so many planeswalkers, it's kind of a game of mass that they'll do something I didn't like. But he's essentially Lab Maniac.
Oh, I see what you mean, as in a... Oh, okay, yeah.
Lab Maniac is already a thing.
Okay,
do we
so
need
yeah,
to make
Lab
a
Maniac,
planeswalker?
Creature, yeah.
Yeah, why do we need to make
oh, sorry,
it...
Lab Maniac the planeswalker.
Why do we need to make it a different thing?
Yeah.
And they've done this a few times. Again, in War of the Spark, you've got Zhang Yanggu Wildcrafter, who is each creature you control with a +1/+1 counter on it, has tap to add one mana of any colour.
That's Rishkar.
That's Cryptolith Rite.
And Rishkar.
Yeah.
I guess you can't. Not every card can be individually unique, specific, because you're going to run out of design space very
but
quickly.
When you make them so exactly the same as another card that already exists, come on.
See, my argument's the other way around. Of what if you want that run around a Lab Maniac deck, but you don't want to have the fragility of a creature? Because I've won off the back of having no cards in my library, drawing a card off of Jace, not off of Lab Maniac, and I have them both in the same deck because Lab Maniac.
But
dies.
Do you need to make that a planeswalker?
I mean,
why do you need
I guess
to make
a little
that
bit. I guess a little bit. Why
you
not?
Have infinite. Well, because you have infinite possibilities. It's ridiculous. I just think it's ridiculous that they literally copy pasted the abilities from something in EDH or whatever format. Yeah. They know what the staples are. But
imagine saying that the first time they made plus one counter. Oh, we've already got a card that makes plus one counters. Why do they have to make any more cards?
They do say that about
why do they make any cards that have plus one counters? Surely they've done all the design space.
I'm not talking about general abilities. I'm not talking about making a planeswalker that synergizes with plus one counters. I mean, for a start, Jing Yang Gu had nothing to do with plus one counters in his original iteration anyway. So,
well, this is the Whiteley thing of where you have to, you've got 32 planeswalkers, they've all got to do summon, you know?
All right.
Why does Obnixilis, why do you lose a life whenever you draw a card?
Why do you lose life whenever you draw a card?
Yeah, exactly. These are the questions, Andy. These are the questions. Because they had to make them all do something. They all had to do something.
But if it's meant to be the big planeswalker blowout, they had to have the slots for those kinds of effects if they're doing something which felt very general or whatever. Mm. Fine. But then that's my issue, the fact that I like the planeswalkers, me as a player that likes flavor, we're doing a fucking podcast on it, I like the flavor of planeswalkers. Yeah. So that does come at odds, it seems, with game design, who, God bless them, like, they have such an impossible task to make a new set to appease all
especially
these
people.
Especially
when they're trying to make people happy like you and me.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's tough, right? But if I'm still allowed then to find that a bit
of course,
an issue,
the whole point is that nothing's beyond reproach.
No, exactly.
And the thing about power level, when you look at War of the Spark, okay, we're not looking at pre-mending walkers, which used to have godlike infinite power.
Sure, so like planeswalkers in the story back in the day were essentially
like
gods.
Nahiri and Sorin are technically still old walkers, and they're just running around
and
having a little piss fight.
Yeah.
Like, they're having a little piss fight. I mean, I get that Nicol Bolas is a millennia, like a 14,000-year-old dragon, or maybe even older. I think Niv-Miz is 14,000. That's annoying. Whatever. Anyway, he's millennia old. Yes, he's going to be significantly more powerful than the rest of them, but it's really hard to gauge what actual power they have. Like, it feels like, as much as Jace is an amazing mind mage that can corrupt the mind of a sphinx, it feels like you could bitch slap him once and he'd fall to the ground.
Yeah,
you know, like, obviously this is very difficult for them to pin down, a metaphysics, a magic, a lore. This is why story and lore is very annoying to pick in mechanically, because it doesn't always follow one for one.
Yeah.
But yeah, in terms of power level as well, in general, like, Obnixilis is significantly more powerful than Tybalt, but Tybalt's ability felt more annoying and more... his card felt more powerful than Obnixilis's card, which for no reason should have, because Obnixilis is a world-conquering demon planeswalker, and Tybalt's a little torturous devil planeswalker. And yes, you don't know exactly what they're... Top Trumps. Why isn't there magic Top Trumps? Why... I'm funding this now, Kickstarter.
Because magic Top Trumps is just...
Planeswalker Top Trumps.
Gathering.
Yeah, no, but you can't, like... You can't test, like, who's the tallest planeswalker. You know, you know what I mean? Like, I'd like to know, like, I don't know, speed. Like, which is the fastest runner? Yeah. I like how you've literally got Samet on your phone.
Right, this is another one that I don't like, because I don't want to waste 20 minutes talking about the ins and outs of Magic Top Trumps. that's something we can discuss in our own time. So I've got Magic...
This is my own time.
I suppose. So Samet the Tested is something I don't like. So this is another thing. So... Planeswalkers, they have the lore for the planeswalkers. Mm. In story, and especially if they've been building up these characters kind of in-house for a while.
And they always have a slide on the web.
They know who these characters are. Yeah. Even if they don't always necessarily write the stories for them, or if they palm the stories off onto other writers, they know who they are. So Samet is meant to have speed magic. She's a speedster, which I think is brilliant, because there's no other planeswalker that has that ability. It's not like she's another telepath or
she's
another
Sonic, basically.
Yeah, she's Sonic the Hedgehog, right? Great. We really needed that. And also really interesting in green and red colours. Like, I don't know why that
haste. Green, red should
it
be
makes
haste,
sense.
Yeah.
It makes sense. But yeah, speed. I don't know, in my head, speed is also to do with blue.
You'd think green, red being bulk rather than brawn rather than
she's a speedster. They've always known this about her. That's not new. But on her Samet the Tested, which is her first planeswalker card, which is way worse than the creature card.
Her creature card is bonkers
before.
Powerful. She turns into a planeswalker.
She
and gets significantly worse.
She loses a color as a planeswalker
she
as well.
Worse.
So hang on, remind me, which god does she get blessed by to have?
I'm pretty sure it's Aketra.
White.
No, Hazoret. Sorry, Hazoret the Fervent.
Good.
When Hazoret's all like, "Oh, you're great," and she's like, "Oh, really, Kawaii?"
Yeah, good. Yeah. I'm glad that that's the case because she is a three color creature, or she's a two color creature with a white activated ability, and then she just becomes a gruel planeswalker, which we don't have enough gruel planeswalkers, but
we have a lot of gruel
planeswalkers. Well, we have no Naya planeswalkers is my point.
Yeah, again, we'll touch on this going forwards as well.
I mean, sure. But none of her abilities have anything to do with haste. None of them have anything to do with... I mean, they've got... The first one is gains double strike. Up to one target creature gains double strike.
Why would, why not Anna Haste as well?
Oh my god. And then I'm asleep and I'm putting her in my trade binder to hope I get some as the creature.
Yeah, we do the Super Friends deck and have to include her because she happens to be a player. Yeah, see,
great.
The fact that your voice can just drop and we don't care.
But her War of the Spark card does give creatures haste.
Yeah.
As her static ability. Yeah. And then even if she dies...
I just forgot.
Yeah.
Or maybe they didn't want her cards to look so unbelievably similar.
I mean, so?
Yeah, don't.
I mean, for me... For my money, she shouldn't have been the Planeswalker in that set anyway.
Yeah, for me, it's also another, just another human Planeswalker.
This is it. This is my last big point. And this is something...
Good, this is my first point in what do we want to see going forward.
Oh, great. So. Yeah, well, yeah. Stop doing human Planeswalkers.
Yeah, please just let's diversify. I know this is funny because I was listening to Mario's latest drive to work and his talk. It was the second head-to-head about what they could change in Commander or the different things that he presented. So basically, I think it was, I can't remember how many different categories he gave, 16 different categories, and made people vote on if this is a change we made between this and this, which would you prefer? And then they did that almost like a tournament, and
yeah,
from like semi quarterfinals, finals,
yeah,
blah 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 blah. And he said one of them was why Planeswalkers can't be your commander, especially now that they have the word legendary written on them, especially considering some of them have been listed as being available as your commanders.
Sure.
And the funny thing is, the ones that have been listed as being your potential commanders, beyond something like Soren Markov, are actually significantly stronger than most Planeswalker cards typically are anyway.
Yeah.
So it's not even like the argument of, oh, some walkers are probably a bit too strong to be able to be sat in your planes command zone. But the other thing that he said is, if these are supposed to be the characters that we identify as from a storyline point of view, narratively, going through the sets, and you cannot use them as a representation of your deck, that feels like a flavor fail.
Sure.
So in the same kind of fashion... They say, okay, we want all of the characters that you're that are Planeswalkers to be relatable. We don't want to make an ooze Planeswalker because you can't relate to being an ooze. Now, I've met some Magic players. They could definitely relate to being oozes. side point anyway. But if you're already... You've got a dichotomy. If you're not willing to make us use Planeswalkers as commanders, then why does it bloody matter if I can relate to it? I can't relate to a dragon.
Well, I
can't relate to most of them.
I don't think it's even a question of not being able to relate to them. So their point is that you can't have Planeswalkers if they want Planeswalkers to be the face of the game, to be unrelatable characters.
Yeah.
So if you don't want to make Planeswalkers that are so wildly unhumanoid or not humans because humans in the real world can't relate to them, which is a complete fallacy.
Yeah.
Because we're invested in a fantasy
I also
card
know, where
game.
Does this data come from? I would love to, I mean, they even say, players say that. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Which players?
Give me the data
The
back.
Players that have the time and the mental capacity to do a whole like 2-hour survey about Magic the Gathering. And that's very different from just Magic players en masse.
Yeah. Like, I also think it might be the people that they won't necessarily look at the article that's written that took them 2 days to write about how they like the specific character. They'll just go, hey, do you prefer this character or this character?
Yeah, that's
too
base.
And people go, I prefer this character. And then they might go, oh, because people prefer this character, it probably means that they like more humanoid characters.
But even if they had more humanoids. So I'm not saying we don't have them. We do have them. We've got merfolk. We've got devils. We've got demons. We've got satyrs. We do have plenty of humanoids. Fine. We've got moonfolk. Do you know what I mean? Like, they are there.
Yeah, Lord Windgrace. We have cat people.
But when you have... things like Kallax. I'm not going to keep ragging on Kallax because I think we all know that I'm not a big fan of him.
Really?
But Kallax is a human-looking construct of a god's imagination. That could have been
anything.
It could have even been a humanoid or a human-looking thing that wasn't necessarily humanoid-looking. It could have been like a living statue or like a Nyxborn or like an Aetherborn. Why are there no Aetherborn Planeswalkers? That'd be fascinating to have an Aetherborn Planeswalker. They die very quickly. That's not necessarily to say they don't have souls.
Yeah, no, because I think, the point is that if they could discover that ability to harvest, or maybe a soul harvester.
This is it.
Oh my god,
you
that's
open
so
up different creature types to being able to have this kind of experience of traversing the multiverse. And they do have them. If you look at the War of Spark novel, there are hilariously about 3 or 4 planeswalkers. They get blipped in and then killed
Viashino,
instantly.
Yeah,
gone.
Bye. Viashino the Gone. That's what we call it.
Even things like satyrs or like centaurs. Like, get a centaur planeswalker.
A sphinx planeswalker.
We now start having things like spider legendaries from Theros.
Yeah.
Confirmed they are humanoid spiders. What's to say that can't
As long as you've got sentience, you should be able... And magic is a product that has given pretty much every type of creature some amount of sentience.
In one plane
I'm not imagining... I mean, I know there used to be this... Nicobolas was supposed to have battled this great Leviathan Planeswalker that I think was just his own retconning of his battle with Ugin.
Sure, looking making it seem it like now, he did some big
yeah,
feat, right?
Yeah, because the Talon Gates were originally supposed to be like the ribcage of a giant Leviathan or whatever. Yeah. And now we're looking back, maybe there wasn't actually a giant Leviathan Planeswalker. But I used to think, oh my God, imagine this giant Leviathan Planeswalker swimming
but
about
just,
the Blind
like,
Eternities.
In different planes, creatures behave differently. Like, yeah. This is a whole
why
tangent.
Does, why,
but
yeah,
like,
why
dragons
can't...
on some planes are much more sentient than dragons on others. Goblins on Marcadia, for example, are the most intelligent creature on Marcadia.
Yeah, like, whereas if you look at, say, in Mirrodin, they look a little bit more feral. They look more like animals. I guess that's where's the line between being an animal and being a sentient being that can actually have a spark with motivation. Because Azor, we know, used to have a spark. Okay, we didn't get to see him with a spark because he gave it up to make the Immortal Sun. We could see in a Commander product at some point in the future, see him in Planeswalker form. It would probably be some boring Azurius lore thing. Oh, God, I'd love that.
But that'd be great. But anyway, so more creature types, I think.
Yeah,
is
more
creature.
I'd say, yeah,
just
more
give
creature
us,
types.
Like, it doesn't matter if they're, like, stop trying to think that because something is fantastical, it's not relatable. Mm-hmm. That's not the case.
Look this at Renin 6.
Renin 6 is a druid that drives a druid mech around.
Yeah, like, it's like Gundam Tree Folk.
It's Gundam
Tree
Folk.
That's so cool. It didn't make people go, oh, I don't understand. It made some people go, wait, is that Urzok? That looks a little bit like Urz when he's younger.
Well, like, people
and then it
who
made
didn't
it,
understand
it was
looked a bit closer and went, oh, that's what
it
it's
was
about.
It was bloody interesting.
It was interesting, so that's fine. Yeah. The other thing is characters that I'd quite like to see moving forward. I did want to see more of Vivian. She's, for someone who hasn't driven a main storyline, she's actually got 5 Planeswalker cards.
Yeah.
She is going to be, looks like she's going to be the driving force in Ikoria.
Yeah,
although
she was basically some amount of foil to Nicobolas, which didn't really pay off. But
no,
that's...
but she's going to be fleshed out in Ikoria. Yeah. The Wanderer.
Yeah,
I am obsessed with seeing
the
Wanderer.
Now, we know it's definitely not Elspeth, because that was the hint that,
maybe, was
that she had made, which I would have actually quite liked to have seen. Had we seen almost like, it could still technically be that Theros Beyond Death happened before War of the
we
Spark.
We have no time frame for
we
it,
We have
really.
No time frame, technically speaking, especially since we didn't lead back into any of the story points from the set before. Anyway, we don't actually really know. I don't think it will be. I don't think they're doing this non-linear storytelling. I think that would be really weird.
But so the Wanderer is her own character. But this idea that
people say that it might be Emrakul.
Maybe.
Maybe an aspect of Emrakul that's escaped and find. I mean, obviously, that's super far-fetched. And again,
but just the design of having like a gunslinger samurai character, because those two...
Who takes kinetic energy and beams it back at people.
Yeah, the connection between Western films, like spaghetti Westerns and samurai films, because they borrow and share a lot of the same storylines. The fact that they managed to merge one into this Planeswalker...
Could we get a set where it's Angrath and the Wanderer going across the desert, long road south? Like, was it with Ewan McGregor, where he goes down and takes a bike down south?
You want to see a buddy movie documentary?
I want to see a buddy movie with the Wanderer and Angrath going through some desert plains, sorting out some hijinks.
Cool,
that'd be amazing.
I don't want to see that.
Wow, okay. We're going to see Angrath's home plane eventually.
I think that'd be a waste of a set.
You don't want to see a Western set?
No, I think it'd be a waste of a set to do some kind of buddy movie between... Oh, what? Because the Wanderer is like a gunslinger.
Yeah! That's what I mean. Imagine
I don't want to see a Western set.
Bring back horsemanship. Anyway.
Yeah, so I want to see that character. What character would you like most to see to come back to?
I would actually like to see, as I said before, I like going back and seeing Planeswalkers. We have so many Planeswalkers we haven't seen yet. I don't want, say, Commodore Guff. I don't want someone like that. I want to see people like Wingrace and Freylis. Like, I would love to see Azor beforehand. I would like to see pre-mending walkers if we can, if there's a way to do it in a set that doesn't make them feel completely utterly busted. There aren't any characters I see currently that I'm like, oh, I really want to see you spark. I would also like to follow some of... I would like to follow... Not negative characters in a protagonistic role, but I would like to see... a set where you're seeing, see, Tibble or Obnixilis go and try and conquer something else.
Sure.
And I don't want to see everything. I know they probably won't do this because it works against the typical, protocol of storytelling of where you follow the good guy. I would like to see some sets where we follow the bad guy. We flash out some of our negative characters beyond, hey, I'm here to twitch my mustache and
rather than having
boss
like
fight.
A comic book villain or like a pantomime villain.
Or even just a boss fight to get to give I'd rather not be props for the good characters.
And also,
I'd rather have their
not
own agency.
An anti-hero.
No.
An actual villain.
I want to see villains from a bad side. I want to see from the point of view of the bad side. That's what I want to see.
I mean, do you know what? I don't see that as being too far-fetched. I reckon we could do a block where we follow the path of the villain and then we have another Planeswalker, maybe like a new Planeswalker coming as the hero.
Or even if right at the end, out of nowhere, this person comes in, you had no idea. It was the Wanderer, and that's the person.
I tell you how that happens, because Wizards of the Coast quite correctly treats Planeswalkers as the selling point faces of their game. It For that to happen, they would need a villain planeswalker that people like so much that they're willing to devote a set to them.
Yeah, and
Nixilis or Tezzeret would not be too far.
Tezzeret's another interesting one. Also, again, Tezzeret's not, and he's moved away from the vein of anti-hero. But say Liliana, you give her so much just to be palatable that I don't like it to the point I'm like, I like the times when you see her where she is.
That's character development, though.
Of course, but the whole point is it's character development. We had character development from good to bad, back to good again, fine. I don't necessarily sometimes want character development from bad to good.
Sure.
I want character development from bad to worse.
Yeah,
you know, I want to see that. I mean, one of my favourite stories was seeing Obnixilis' point of view story where he sparks because there are no more worlds to conquer. That's like, there's nothing more he could kill.
The despair of him being
successful. Oh my god, that's the opposite of Kallax. Oh my god, it's a beautiful... And obviously, yeah, if I hate Kallax that much, I must love Obnixilis this much. But that's kind of what I want to see. I want to see how bad guys get some more love. And I do want to see less humanoid. I would love some more flex. Just something a bit more interesting. I mean, we're still getting cards like Ren 6. We're still getting the Royal Scions. We are getting change-ups. So I think... potential. There's lots of potential.
Cool. I agree. All right, guys, we're going to keep this one a little bit shorter than our other mammoth episodes that have kind of been very rambling and spiraling. Mm. If you haven't yet gone to our Twitter page to put down what planes from the multiverse you would like to see pop up in MTG Story, there is a pinned post about that. We've already had a few suggestions from people doing suggestions from the planar cards from the planes chase deck. We've also had people just saying that they actually want to go back to planes which we've already visited but maybe haven't seen enough of in modern Magic.
Yeah, and seeing some of the old sets, some of the old planes in the modern environment would be quite interesting because some of them got wacky crazy abilities and the entire set was pants.
Absolutely.
So it'd be nice to see them revitalized.
Yeah, fantastic. So please, guys, give us your input because God knows we've...
Vote Western.
Western. God knows we would like to hear everyone's opinion on this. Whilst you're on our Twitter page as well, feel free to follow us at MT Flavoring. You can follow myself at Andy Manface.
At the Fox in the Moon.
At the Fox in the Moon is where you're at. You can email us also. You can email us mtflavoring@gmail.com. If you ever want to get in contact, if there's any content, guys, that you would like us to start focusing on, maybe any parts of the story you'd like us to focus on, if there's anything that you haven't heard us talk about, you want to hear us talk about, if there's anything that we've touched on that you think you would want to see a much more expanded episode on, please let us know as well. We are a growing podcast. We're still relatively new, and we want to grow as quickly as possible so we can make the content that we like and that you like, and we need your help to do so. So follow, share us around, turn some non-Vorthos into Vorthos. That always helps.
Welcome to the fold.
Welcome to the fold. And we'll cap that off by saying, guys, as always, we've been Magic the Flavouring.
See you soon.